Okay, that was great. Thank you, Dylan. That was very dexterous of you. So we're back here on the review session for the APUS, and we're joined by Sarah, Eddie, Marco, and Andrew, and Dylan's working the phones. If you'd like to call us up, you can reach us at 767-5998, answering all calls all the time. In the meantime, we were just talking about Jacksonian democracy, as well as before that, I mentioned to you, don't forget about the religion factor. That's a very important thing. Now, let's talk about the Great Awakenings. You're on. Why don't we take the Great Awakenings? We have Great Awakening 1 and Great Awakening 2. Who wants to take Great Awakening 1?
The first Great Awakening seems to be on the tests a lot. So somebody else has to take that because I know nothing about it.
Well, split the churches, right? The Presbyterians. And
I do know it was run. The two main priests or preachers were John Edwards and Whitefield.
Jonathan Edwards, not to be confused with our
John Edwards,
little interesting presidential candidate down from South Carolina.
It was the old light and new light, right?
The new lights versus the old lights, exactly.
So then what was the difference between the first Great Awakening?
The first Great Awakening, remember George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards. That's your kind of like revival of religion in the colonies. Yeah. The second one comes
around the same time as like your transcendentalism.
What was the Burnt Over District?
The Burnt Over District is an area near Rochester where the second Great Awakening began, led by a guy by the name of Charles Grandison Finney. It was in the Rochester area. Now that's why you care about the Burnt Over District? You just don't want to know about history? It's all about what you do on the final, I understand?
I don't really
care
about
that's where the Burnt Over District is. And there was the belief of the doctrine of works, that if we became better people, we would then become reach a point of perfection and reach a millennium, which is 1,000 years of peace. And that was the belief. So that's why the Second Great Awakening can be credited to maybe getting rid of slavery, maybe getting rid of with the whole temperance movement. There was just a belief that we can become better as a society. So those are some of the important things for you to understand about the Great Awakenings. All right, let's take the next caller.
Hello, caller.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I just wanted to know, who killed Alexander Hamilton? Because
Aaron Burr
at Weehawken in New Jersey.
Awesome. See, notice how everybody remembers that
the reason I remember it, if anybody else is a Saturday Night Live fan and has seen the Saturday Night Live clip called Lazy Sunday, there's a line in it directly referencing Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton.
I hope that's your essay. You guys will knock that out of the park. On July 11th, 1804, the saddest day in American history, was when that Alexander Hamilton was murdered. But he died on the 12th. He died the next day.
The 12th of July.
That's a misconception about the 12th of July, 1804. That's the misconception about the duel. Everyone just assumes, he was killed right away and he died instantly. That didn't happen. That was a gradual thing. Well, thank you for the call, caller. Once again, 5998-767-5998. Anything you want to talk about, or maybe you just want to say hi to one of the callers because you're just so jealous of their knowledge of American history that you envy them, or maybe you just want to have Andrew sing the ABCs. Whatever you want, call us in. We're going to stay on the air till about 6 o'clock, and then
I'm going to
splice this up, and I'll leave it up for you online.
Eddie Grove rules, peace.
Or if anybody would like to call up and try to stump Eddie with a question with a random fact, that's always fun to do as well. That could actually be like a kind of like a game show. So regarding religion, those are the things that you should know. The Great Awakenings, also Transcendentalism, which is a movement with who are your Transcendentalist thinkers?
Emerson.
Right, Thoreau
and Henry David Thoreau.
Okay, Henry David Thoreau, who refused to pay his taxes and went to jail.
He was also
and,
a very brilliant writer.
Emerson, who's probably the most famous author of his day. And Eddie, you want to say something about the Transcendentalists?
Yeah, it was a movement of a return to spirituality, almost in the deist sense. And these writers found spirituality in nature. Thoreau, in particular, was famous because he wrote a book called Walden, in which he lived in a rural setting on a pond for a couple of years and tried to live a simpler life away from the world. His famous quote was, "Our lives are frittered away by detail. Simplify, simplify."
That was scary, actually. Thank you.
That was an inspired explanation, Eddie.
Wait, hold on. Eddie Grove is doing that for his honors project. Don't give him too much credit.
I thought I was like, all right, okay. I'm not really impressed. I thought you would know more. So the
I've been swimming in Walden Pond. It's quite cold.
That's great.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
That was very poignant. The Transcendentalists, that's another movement that kind of goes around the same time as your Second Great Awakening. And a lot of the stuff, if you understand the philosophy of Emerson, a lot of it's from the East. It's similar to almost like Buddhism, if you've ever read the Vedas, which I bet you haven't, Eddie Grove. I bet you haven't read the Vedas.
No.
Take that. I have. That's right. That's right. So the Vedas or the Upanishads, some of the stuff that you may remember from Global One, there are striking similarities between Transcendentalists and those as well. So you may want to know about that stuff as well as gender. Gender seems to come up very often. Gender and race, gender and race. And at the college level, you see a lot of gender and race. So I think what we need to talk about are the – I think we need to take women from the cult of domesticity, and let's gradually bring that up to Seneca Falls, and let's then take that from Seneca Falls up into the women getting the right to vote in the 19th Amendment. So who wants to start with the colonial woman, the cult of domesticity?
All right. I got my notes right in front of me. Okay.
No, it's radio. They don't know that.
Well,
you know this off the top of your head.
Okay,
because of your superior teaching. Yes.
All right. Fine. The cult of domesticity, that was basically just women stay in their home sphere and, you know, they just raise, you know, they do what women did back then. They just raised their kids. They didn't really have jobs. They,
out.
They would lose their property when they married a man.
Oh, yes. That was a question on the final.
Yeah. Divorce is extraordinarily uncommon and premarital sex is absolutely awful and all that stuff. An interesting fact. 1/3 of all marriages back in the colonial periods were caused by unplanned pregnancies. So, yeah.
Seriously.
Bad.
Also, during that same time was the ideal of Republican motherhood, which was another question
today.
What was it?
What's the answer? What's the answer?
Guys, we have a caller coming.
Oh.
Wait, hurry. What's the answer?
Which is that women are supposed to bring up their children with Republican ideals.
Yeah, I got one right.
Yep.
I got one out of 80.
Hola.
Hello, caller. Caller. Bye, caller.
Hi, I'm calling to stump Eddie Grove.
Oh, hi. I'm thinking of who this voice is. This sounds like, I know who it is, but we're not supposed to say it.
I'm calling to stump Eddie Grove.
Yeah, I know who it is. Go ahead.
Oh, I know who this is.
Stump me. Bring it.
Hello?
Yes,
bring it. Hi, what's your question?
Bring it, my friend.
There were 3 men at the Camp David Accords meeting.
Oh, okay. It was Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, and the third one was third one was Nixon, right?
No!
Carter!
We went over this.
How did you get Menachem Begin, man?
Because Menachem Begin's the coolest name ever, and Anwar Sadat's pretty close.
Nixon? It's 1977.
All right, okay, you stumped me.
There's an update to everybody listening. Eddie Grove has been stumped on the first try. Eddie Grove stumped on the first try.
Menachem
Begin?
Menachem Begin.
Yeah, but you're getting the hard ones and not the easy ones. Cancel everything out.
Would help with a ballpoint gun, there you go.
All right, that was very impressive for anybody who turned off the radio before you gave the third answer. Mm-hmm. All right, you can stump Betty Grove, 767-5998. Let's continue with the more important task, which, of course, is women, gender, and what you may need to know about it on the AP exam. So what are we up to?
We just passed Republican motherhood.
Oh, and another note for the colonial woman is the idea of femme covert. Which is the husband and the wife become one when they get married.
Right, with the husband being the dominant one, of course.
Of course.
I sense a little tension over there, Eddie Grove and Sarah.
No, I'm good.
No?
I'm good.
You sure?
Well, in that time,
that
ideal.
Was the idea.
And what happens to property at that time?
It goes to the man, yeah.
Right. Yeah, the man assumes the rights of voting.
On the test, just pick the one where the man is the dominant figure.
Exactly.
It's usually the key.
And basically, the Victorian era wasn't that different. The cult of domesticity was, if anything, stronger
during
the Victorian era. What we think of as traditional role of women in the home really was, especially the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're up to
About the early 1800s. But we talked about the Second Great Awakening.
Right.
We talked about the other Transcendentalist movement. So now we're up to about Seneca Falls, and women, of course, were not allowed into that London anti-slavery conference. That really angered them, as they were trying to go for abolition. They were trying to go for temperance. But this is important. It comes up all the time in the AP exam. They were not going for the right to vote. Not in the 1830s.
No,
it wasn't
not.
Really coming up. Okay, that's not going to come out till later, of course, after the 15th Amendment, which really angered them. So Seneca Falls is the big convention. But this is another thing that we talked about. In terms of voting, could women vote before 1919 or 1920?
Yes, they could.
They could in states west of the Mississippi.
Exactly.
Right, the states that if you never think you're going to go to this state, it's probably a state women could vote, like Montana, Wyoming, and places of that nature. So they were indeed allowed to vote.
Wait, now, who question, your, who's Cheryl Chisholm?
Let's talk about the right to vote before we do that.
Skipped over the abolitionist women.
Okay, well, who are the abolitionists, like the Grimke sisters?
Yeah, the Grimke sisters. And then we had the whole women's temperance movement and the Women's Christian Temperance Union.
Most of the women's rights reformers in the 1800s started as abolitionists, yeah, such as Susan B. Anthony and Lucretia Mott. Most of them started that way. And then they became disenchanted. It's not that they turned away from abolitionism, it's that they realized that half the problem was that they weren't being given enough of a voice because they were women and because there was discrimination. So they started to fight for the cause of women's rights as well.
Right.
Especially after the Civil War, once slavery was abolished.
Okay, so there are some women that we need to know, like, in terms of the progressive era, when you have the settlement houses that we need to talk about, there are two women very important to know about settlement houses. Who are they?
Jane Addams.
Good one. And? The other one's tough, is it? No, that was you're about 1,000 years off.
Florence Kelly.
Okay, so one is Hull House. Jane Addams is in Chicago with Hull House, which helps out immigrants, and Florence Kelly is the Hester Street settlement house in New York. So you have that going on as well, for which could help you out, because there's kind of that time period right before they get the right to vote where you want to throw in some more stuff as to why women are getting the right to vote. And really why women get the right to vote, the spark for that is World War I, when they start taking on the men's sphere in your World War I jobs. You know, other things to know about World War I as well. Who else was getting jobs besides women in World War I?
African Americans.
Right, African Americans are coming with the Great Migration forward. So thank you very much for knowing that. So go ahead.
That was an answer. They moved north for jobs?
Correct.
All right, I got that one.
Yeah, it's a good thing to know. So we're going to stay on the air for about 15 minutes. If you have questions, 767-5998. We will take your call. We will transfer them over. Sorry for those of you who we hung up before, but I think we figured out the phones for now. But we'll transfer your call over if you do call in. We are live. It is 5:45 p.m. on Friday. No, it's Tuesday. If you are listening to this on record, please stop calling in because the show was 2 days ago. But we're going to put this up live today around 6:30. You can get it on demand at portradio.org. Dylan, let's do a little PSA and promo because we've been on for about an hour. You're listening to WDOT Port Washington. We're going to take care of the housekeeping today. Want to play a PSA?
Sure.
All right, here's a word from our sponsors.
Child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public.
At the karaoke bar, Greg shows the telltale signs of being wasted. First off, he's in a karaoke bar. On stage, he can't read the lyrics on the monitor. Greg decides to freestyle rap.
It's easy to tell if you've had way too many to drive. But what if you've had just one too many to drive? Never underestimate just a few. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
All right, we're going to. We've done a lot of stuff on the 20th century.
We did.
And just to be the elephant in the room on that, if it says 20th century, they're talking about the 1900s. And if they're talking about the 19th century, it's the 1800s. But you already know that because you're an AP. So, Marco, you seem to be scratching your head over there. You are baffled by certain things in the 1800s, yet you feel like you are an expert on the 1900s. Now, what do we need to go over here?
Well, the thing is, a lot of the I'm having trouble tying together a lot of the movements and the ideals in the 1800s, whereas in the 1900s it just seems to come together.
Right. Now, what in particular should we be talking about here? And once again, you can call us in if you enjoyed our advertisements at 5998-767-5998. What in particular? Do you like this techno music,
well,
Marco?
Yeah.
Does this help you think?
No, not really.
Good. We'll leave it on just to make you uncomfortable. But what in particular about the 1800s?
I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, because a lot of the things in the 1800s I don't associate with the 1800s, like the progressive movement, which had its roots in the 1800s. I always see
you're talking late 19th century stuff. You mean like the Gilded Age, like all those? You're talking about populism and Gilded Age and Sherman Antitrust Act, those things.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Gilded Age starts after. Remember, 1877 is a very important year for you to understand.
What does
because
Gilded mean?
I can't say that on the air.
Yeah.
Why is 1877 important?
We have a caller. We have a caller.
We'll stay tuned with that. All right, we'll transfer the call over.
There isn't a beeping button.
Did you transfer it?
There.
All right, we'll take the call first.
Hello, you are on the air. Eddie, you're still there. Hello?
What were the anti-combination laws?
Can you say it again?
What were the anti-combination laws?
Oh, like the Antitrust Act, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah,
one of the test questions said, what are the anti-combination laws?
Yeah, that was the anti-trust.
Yeah, sometimes you'll see, hold on, let me go to the caller. Sometimes you'll see different things phrased on the test. For instance, we had one test in 2001 that said customs duties as one of the choices, and everyone was looking for tariffs, and there were no tariffs, said customs duties. The anti-combination laws are referring like Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Antitrust Act, trying to make sure that companies are not combining illegally, and that's where you get a monopoly.
Thanks.
Surely.
No problem.
All right, let's get back to 1877. Why is that an important year? Eddie Grove!
1877? Wasn't that the end of Reconstruction? That was when there was a bargain between Hayes and the Democratic Party that Hayes would become the president, but he would also end Reconstruction.
Okay, and 1877 is a turning point here because Reconstruction ends, so we're not dealing with race so much anymore, even though we are, but what is the main concern now after 1877? It's the same year as the railroad strike. So you're going to have a transformation in 1877 where now everything's the labor question. It's about the monopolies taking over. It's about unions getting rights. It's about strikes and wages and governments that don't support the worker, that support big business.
What did Mark Twain do?
Mark Twain, he's a writer. He coined the term Gilded Age.
We have a caller, by the way.
Stop getting excited about the caller. I'm trying to give you pivotal information here. All right, let's get excited. We'll transfer the call. But so Mark Twain coined the term Gilded Age, and Gilded Age refers to that whole time period from 1877 to about 1900 because it looked like it was golden on the outside, but really there was a lot of junk going on the inside. And for junk, I can't really explain it to you because we're on the air, and SEC regulations can't really give us a good definition of gilded. So, but that's what he coined the term, that whole territory, that whole time period, because you have rich people who are really rich and poor people who are poor, and there are a lot of inventions and stuff going on. So we'll transfer over the caller. Once again, you can call us at 767-5998. And, all right, we'll take the call.
Hello, caller.
Hello, caller.
But really, there was a lot of junk going on the inside. And for junk, I can't really explain it to you. We're on the air.
Yeah, you got your radio on. Can you turn your radio down? Because you see how you could hear yourself in the background?
Yeah.
That's why, Dylan, you got to tell these people to turn their radio down.
Hello? Can you hear us? Rolled you.
Hello?
Oh, well. we have them call back.
That happened to me when I Rick Rolled you.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, you gotta turn down your radio because we have a slight delay with the stream going out over. So That's why for a second there I thought that caller had the same voice as me. That was very exciting. So we're talking about that's where the Gilded Age term comes in. So things to know in the Gilded Age. You're going to have the Sherman Antitrust Act. Okay, you're going to have try to get rid of the corporations. However, the corporations are still going to be pretty supreme until the Progressive Era. And if it wasn't for the Gilded Age, you probably wouldn't have had the Progressive Era. The Progressive Era is a reaction to the Gilded Age. So that's important to know. Now, also during this time period, you have Native American issues like Wounded Knee. What happened there?
Lots of Native Americans got killed by
massacred.
Massacred.
Was that the ghost?
And that's the same. That's the same year. Because when you talk about contextualizing, that's the same year as the Sherman Antitrust Act. So these things are going on simultaneously. You have this Sherman Antitrust Act, you know, going on with big business problems, and you have Native American problems. And an important thing to understand also is the Dawes Act of 1883.
Oh, yeah.
And the Dawes Act of 1883 involves Americans trying to assimilate those Native Americans.
That wasn't an answer on the test.
I'm sorry.
What was the answer?
I don't remember.
Do you remember what you said?
All right, we're going to transfer a call or no?
Transfer to private ownership.
Right?
Yes.
Woo! Got that one.
You got that one wrong then.
I'll get it. It's the it's like the phony phone
call.
Answer that you think it is.
So that's important to know as well. So there's a lot of stuff that you need to contextualize in that 1800s. Yes, it's all happening at the same time, and there are different things involved. But immigration is going on at this time as well. So in terms of immigration, we need to know about different great waves of immigration. Minakuchi, first great wave of immigration.
Oh, I know this. Can I take it?
Sarah, first great wave of immigration.
In the 1800s.
Okay, guys, we got a call.
All right, we're going to take a question first, but then we got to talk
about immigration.
Who doesn't love immigration?
I don't know. Sarah.
Republicans.
Yeah, Republicans.
All right, it's fine.
The know-nothings.
Hello.
Hello, caller.
It's Andrew Shang. I have a question for Eddie Grove.
Oh, yes, go ahead. Bring it.
Okay.
I was stumped the last time, so you might have a good shot.
Oh, Matt stumped you.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What South Carolina legislature was passed in response to Cato's Rebellion?
What South Carolina legislation, you mean?
The Stono Rebellion. A Stonewall Uprising, yeah.
Oh, does anybody know what the answer to that?
Okay, I'm stubbed there because I had just heard of the Stonewall Uprising today, so.
Is that what they moved to Florida? That was when they moved to Florida, right?
Yeah, you stumped me. Good job,
I think
Andrew.
It was,
Actually,
I believe, Sarah, you did very well in the Stonewall Rebellion, because, yeah. Don't you want to share?
I'm a Stonewall Rebellion expert.
She got that right, and she was like, it's about time you talked about that.
Well, it was, first of all, it was a slave rebellion.
Federal Act of 1740, Andrew.
Ooh, rough.
Oh.
All right, thank you for the call. Nice try. You tried to stump Eddie, and it didn't work.
It didn't work.
It worked first.
All right, so... Eddie, you're 1-for-2. You're batting 500. That gets you into the Hall of Fame in most sports. So regarding immigration, we have the first great wave of immigration. First great wave of immigration. What was it? Tell us about it.
Sarah likes immigration.
Oh, I love immigration.
First great wave.
The Irish immigration.
Okay, so tell us about it. About what year?
1830s?
1830s, 1840. Remember we had the
because
potato
of the
famine.
Irish potato famine. That's when my family came over, as you can tell from my red hair.
Yes.
And then was the German immigration in the later 1800s.
It's also in the mid-1800s. The first great wave is in the middle of the 1840s or so. So that's your first great wave. Now, what about the second great wave? How does that distinguish from the first great wave?
Well, the first great wave was primarily Irish and German, whereas the second great wave was Italians.
Yes.
Southeastern European. Yeah, that's right.
Yes. The Southern Italian, Slavic. Russian, that's a larger great wave. And there's also a distinguish between...
With Chinese people?
Let's do the Russian.
That's really a different wave.
Okay, well, because... The second great wave, you have unskilled workers coming over to cities, as opposed to the first great wave, you have more skilled workers. These are typically people who are pushed out because of the pogroms in Russia. The Asians were not allowed to come over because of the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act and the 1907 Gentlemen's Agreement. And both said that you could not have Asian immigration to the United States. It's not going to be until years later that the Chinese are going to be allowed back in to the United States. So typically you have Asian immigration. It's either before 1882 or like after World War II. So in terms of immigration, you need to know about that. Well, we also need to know about those immigrant quota acts. What are the quota acts, like 1921, 1924?
I can tell you that. I mean,
you just can't come in, right?
they place limits per country.
So who did it favor? Immigration from
well,
where?
Well, the Chinese quota acts were...
It favored,
we
it favored Western
we
immigration.
Call. Wait, we have caller.
Western versus this.
Hello, caller.
Hello, caller.
Hey, Eddie.
Yes.
What number am I thinking of?
Seven, if it's between 1 and 10. Yeah, exactly, because everybody thinks of seven, huh? Gotcha.
Oh, and Eddie Grove.
he's a mind reader.
I think he said ha-ha. Like,
no, ha-ha was like, wow, I'm so impressed that he knew that. So to finish up on quotas, we tried to get immigration
from the Western
Europe,
European countries
yes.
versus
right.
the Southeastern.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, you don't know what that. Someone just called, didn't want to go on the air, wanted to talk about the Non-Intercourse Act. Oh, I get it. Oh, people are typing things into that computer. Why don't you? You could have put that on the air on the other microphone. Oh, all right. The question was the Non-Intercourse Act. Also, Macon's Bill number 22. Remember that one?
Oh yeah.
That was the way we kind of got rid of the Embargo Act.
That's what I was trying to think of.
Oh, well, it wasn't on test. That's like the most obscure. Like, if you write about that, you're getting a 5
no,
on
because
the test.
I was reading about the Embargo Act last night in my review book, and I was trying to remember what the other bill was, because I was thinking that if that was the essay on the AP exam, that I would know about the other bill.
No one's giving you an essay on Macon's bill. If you know what Macon's bill is, you don't need this review session. Just turn off the radio if you know what it is.
I know what it is.
It's a hard – oh, really? Well, don't turn off the radio because you're still on the air. We're going to stay on the air for about 10 more minutes or so. And then I'm going to kind of splice this up. And I think we've gotten to a lot of the major issues. If you do have calls, 5998-767-5998. We'll stay on the air for just a little bit longer. So we finished up on immigration. We did the 19th century.
Speaking of immigration, I actually have a question about that.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys answered this. I wasn't really paying attention. But what was the open door policy?
Oh, well, that doesn't really have anything to do with that immigration, actually.
Right, the open door notes were sent around by Secretary of State John Hay.
Yeah.
And they were basically, the U.S. was a little jealous of all the European nations because they had spheres of influence in China,
right.
And they were being kind of elbowed out, and so to push in American economic interests, Hay sent around these notes saying, hey, let us in.
Yeah, here's my mnemonic device for that. If you see John Hay on the exam, say, hey, it's China. Because that's usually what the question's about.
I'm going to say that out loud.
And also, you could think of it as in terms of opening a door. If you open a door, you let something in. What?
Yep. I'm going to transfer him over.
Who is it?
You ready?
Is it going to be like Remler again?
That's going to be interesting.
No.
No.
I'll see.
Hello, caller.
You're on the air.
Hey.
Hi.
It's Johnny Scheffler.
Johnny!
Johnny was supposed to host with us.
Johnny, I've been talking about you all night.
Fantastic. I have a question about mustaches of the Civil War. I know that we have Burnside, and he's sideburns.
Burnside was my favorite, actually.
Can I just ask what this music is?
Sorry, was it directed at me?
it's directed at anybody. This is kind of upsetting for me. I'm on the train now. I'm to this thing at the Austrian embassy that my grandfather kind of signed me up for, and he told me that he owes him that I find a Jewish girlfriend.
Well, did that work out?
I think any kind of girlfriend actually would be okay by him.
Oh, okay.
The Austrians had great beards, if you go back to Europe.
Yeah, so to answer your question about facial hair, Burnside, of course, is where we get sideburns from, and I hope you can understand that, as well as some of you had cleanly shaven generals, but usually not. Robert Gould Shaw had a little thing on his chin. Robert E. Lee, of course, had the very big beard. Stonewall Jackson had an enormous beard.
Look at Longstreet.
Longstreet, a tremendous beard. The Confederates were usually beardy. And the Union generals usually did some type of design.
What did Lincoln shave his beard?
David Farragut, I believe, was cleanly shaven.
Hooker had a beard.
Hooker
had a mustache.
No, Hooker was not very facial hair.
Hooker had 1636.
What?
Mead
did.
36.
Yeah. All right. So, Johnny, we have. I don't know what he's talking about. We have more calls to take, so thank you very much for calling.
Bye, Johnny.
Bye, Johnny.
Bye, Johnny.
And hopefully you can help us host next year, because he wanted to host this year.
Aww.
Yeah, so...
We should do a reunion.
Love this song.
All right, we got a caller.
All right, we're going to transfer over another one.
Hello, caller.
You're on the air.
Hello?
That was...
What was that?
I mean, that was bad.
I didn't hear
it. It was computerized. It said that someone's a loser. That was impressive. You guys are so technologically impressive. All right, we'll take another one.
Andrew.
Probably.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, Dad.
Hi.
Okay. Explain ergonomics.
Yeah, trickle. It's basically trickle down economics. It's the idea that you should. Cut taxes for the wealthy to free up spending and private investment, and then that money will then trickle down to the poorer classes in the economy.
Supply-side economics.
Yes.
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
It didn't really work very well because Reagan had deficits. Reagan, at the start of his term, had $900 billion in deficits, and at the end had $2.7 trillion in deficit.
Wow.
So it didn't exactly work as well as many people think it did.
It did stimulate the economy because Reagan entered his presidency in a recession, and then the supply side economics at that time did appear to stimulate the economy, whereas in more recent years it hasn't worked quite as well, which is why a lot of the current politicians are complaining about deregulation. But Reagan was for deregulation, and it worked at the time to a degree.
Okay.
Thank you.
All
right, thank you for calling.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Yeah, we're going to stay on the air just a little bit longer as the phones ring 5998-767-5998. The promo, hey, do you like track and field? You can come down to the meet in Plainview next Tuesday if you want to. Come on down and cheer on Andrew Minicucci as he hurdles, and Eddie Grove as he runs, and Marco as he throws the shot put. So please come on down if you want to. You don't have to. You're listening to WDOT Port Washington at 6:04. And we want you to call in right now, because if you don't, we're going to get off the air, and I'm going to edit this up, and I'll have it on for you on demand by the end of the night. We covered Jacksonian democracy. We got New Deal, progressivism, populism. We just did immigration. We did the Gilded Age. We did the recent stuff. One thing we need to end on is that colonial stuff that I know that everyone hates because you learned about it in September. So let's go over a few of the highlights that seem to be on the test often. For instance, Bacon's Rebellion. Who wants to take that?
Rebellion. Never mind.
If you want to, you can.
Dominate. Flip a coin on it.
Well,
Martha, why don't you start, and then Sarah, you can finish.
All right, fine.
Well, it was a rebellion, and it took place in the Chesapeake Bay. And?
Is that all you got? Okay. No. Well, Bacon's Rebellion was in 1676,
Marco, you're getting destroyed here, by the way, but go ahead.
Bacon was a tobacco farmer who was discontent with the rich and the Native Americans, who aided the rich with fur trade. And so Bacon led a revolt against the rich Governor William Berkeley and the Native Americans.
And do you know how it ended?
He burnt down Jamestown.
He died.
Yeah, that's it.
And his supporters disbanded. They were actually trying to take out their aggression on the Native Americans, and when they got too aggressive, they burnt down Jamestown. And that led to a very strong reaction by Lord Berkeley.
Okay, what I think we should do is take the colonial time and now talk about salutary neglect, and maybe bring that into the causes of the revolution, and then we'll finish our time here with the review session. And salutary neglect, as all this stuff is going on, Britain's profiting because of mercantilism, and Britain knows that really that's the only thing they care about. So they allow the colonial governments to have their Great Awakening, and they allow them to have their House of Burgesses and all their little legislatives branch stuff going on. And even though there's no taxation without representation, the colonists, they have a mutual understanding. But the French and Indian War is going to change that. And the French and Indian War is going to lead to an end of salutary neglect. So why doesn't one of you take us through why the French and Indian War led to all those Stamp Acts and Townsend Acts and all that stuff?
Okay. Well,
I'm going to start it.
You're going to start this? Okay. All right.
Well,
don't mind if I correct you.
All right, whatever. All right, so the at the conclusion of the War of 1812, England became a lot more involved tax-wise and just everything-wise in the colonies because they had spent so much money defending the colonies and had used up so much money in the war against France, which is also known as the Seven Years' War. And they imposed many taxes, such as the Stamp Act, Townshend Acts, and whatever other things. And it was just to repay England for the War of 1812. And you can
compare. Okay. Well, after the French and Indian War, the turning point in salutary neglect from the British. Really letting the colonies run themselves to intervening in the colonial economics was the proclamation of 1763, which said that which said that colonists were not allowed to settle west of the Appalachian Mountains, and the settlers who had already settled west of the Appalachian Mountains were angered with the British for a long period of time. Implementing salutary neglect and letting the colonists run themselves, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, after the French and Indian War, which the colonists did help them fight, coming in and taking over and asserting a power that they hadn't previously.
Okay, so the chronology goes thusly: Stamp Act, Townshend Act, Boston Massacre, Boston Tea Party. Of course, you have the Proclamation of 1763 in there, too, yeah. And also the Sugar Act. But I'm just going with the bigger things. Boston Tea Party, which is followed by the Intolerable Acts, also known as the
Coercive
Acts, which sometimes it comes up
1774.
On the AP. Very impressive. And then Lexington and Concord in 1775, followed by the Declaration of Independence. Now, one of the things that comes up all the time. In 1775, are we British or American?
British.
In 1770, are we British or American?
British.
On July 3rd, 1776, are we American or British?
British.
Or Indonesian.
Okay, long, God save the king, God save the queen. That's what they would say all the time. Okay, these are times when we were British. And the last-ditch effort to reconcile was the Olive Branch Treaty. Sarah is sighing, so I guess we're almost done here. So we have covered
the greatness of the American country.
Oh, okay. Well, it's getting a little bit late here, and it's the dinner hour, so we're going to leave the phone lines open for another 5 minutes or so at 767-5998. If not, we wish you the best of luck. You can get an online review sheet at MrKlaff.com. It's on the top. You just click in, and it says AP review sheet. I put up some tricks that we talked about today, some mnemonic devices, a bunch of links, some videos.
Lots of songs.
Lots of songs that you may find useful or useless, one of the two. Although I'll have you know that an Intel finalist used my songs, and that's the reason why he got a 5, he said. But I think he was probably smart enough to get it anyway. But I can't use names on the air, but he's a former DJ of WDOT fame. And I said, really? And he said, yes. I said, yeah, that's why you got the 5. Not that he would have gotten it on the first day of school anyway if I just gave him a math book to study from, but...
Mr. Clapp, some people are dissatisfied with 5s and want 6s.
Some people do want 6s. I'm hoping that some people in this room will get a 6. If you include Macon's Bill on it, in the Non-Intercourse Act, you could get a 6 on the exam. I'm totally kidding. You're looking with a gullible look. I'm just kidding. You can't get a 6. A 5. A 4 or a 5 would be great. Of course, many people just want to get the 3, which is the college credit. We wish you the best of luck to do that. Since we have some great students here, why don't we go around? Just what are your last tips that you can give as successful students?
We have a caller.
No, you're not supposed to say that. You can't get excited. You gotta have a poker face with this.
We
thing.
We have a caller.
No, you can't mention it. At
you
can't. All.
You can't. Say
excuse
it.
You, Mister. Oh, it's right in my notes.
All right, Sarah. What are your last tips for the people listening in the audience right now?
Richard Hofstadter.
That's your tip?
That's
to use
it.
Richard Hofstadter,
Hofstadter on it.
Marco, you have any last-second tips that you can give?
The most important thing is paying attention for all 4 hours and being on the top of your game.
It's 4. I thought it was 3.
3, 4 hours, whatever it is. And just basically, if you know everything, just make sure they know that you know everything. In your essays, use that exhaustive breath and put in as many details as possible. And always, always tie those into the main theme. Don't ever forget the theme of your essay or your question.
All right, I'm back.
All right, very good.
Right, we have a caller.
All right, we're putting in a question. Hold on, and then we'll get to Andrew's tips. Oh, the person doesn't want to go on the air?
They were a robot. They can't go on the air. This is a human. Unfortunately, this is
what
human
was the
review
what was
session.
The question?
The question was, what was the turning point of the Civil War?
Gettysburg.
Yeah, I'd say it depends how you look at it.
Emancipation Proclamation.
Yes.
Some people say the Emancipation Proclamation because it changed the war aims. Some say Gettysburg. Militarily, it's Gettysburg. But in terms of policy, you may want to consider the Emancipation Proclamation because it changed the war aims. So, I would lean toward Gettysburg as far. Of course, what's the turning point of the Revolutionary War?
Saratoga.
And the turning point of World War II?
D-Day.
Very good. Yes. Who's got a cell phone camera? By the way, I'll take a picture.
Yeah,
of it.
I'd say
site.
Stalingrad on World War II.
I do, but I don't have.
I mean, D-Day.
No one has a cell phone.
But that's
for history.
It's gonna be D-Day.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
All right. So
if this was Euro, I'd say.
Andrew, what is your last tip for the nice people?
Well, I'm going to sound really unoriginal because Sarah took what I was going to say. I used Richard Hofstadter. But a big thing is on MrClap.com, he has all the authors of stuff, and just use that.
Okay, guys,
sound, make you sound a lot smarter.
What do I hit?
The okay.
Transferring one over.
Okay, we have one. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Noah. He just told me to call you.
Yes, I did.
Okay, so what's going on the radio tonight?
Well, the good time that I told you about is the AP review session for U.S. history.
This is
Bondi?
Yes, I told it for a good time to call this
all
number.
Right, this is DJ Bondi. Do you have any questions about AP U.S. history?
Yeah, what happened to my 1 point on the Regis?
That's exactly. Was that directed at Eddie, who got
2 points
last year?
Oh, that Napoleon.
Oh, I beat you, Eddie. I'm
all right,
smarter
thank you,
than any girl.
Okay, no, I appreciate it. See you later.
I
was useful. All right, so we're going to wrap things up here. Do we have Eddie? You have take us home with your tip, and then we'll give Dylan's tip, who's been working the phones all night. We thank Dylan.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I like reading those spark charts before the test. I feel like it can it's a good way to brush up on certain information that you may have forgotten relatively quickly and efficiently. So that would be my recommendation the night before the test. If you don't want to pour through the books, just read the spark chart.
Dylan.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage you to look back at all the practice tests that we've had and look at those questions because they ask those over and over again.
Yeah.
And at the same time, maybe rephrase them to yourself. Think of different ways they could be asked because they might just be the same question in a different way.
I agree with that. I think that's one of the major things, that they only have so many questions to go around. And I noticed that the more practice tests that students take, the more apt they are to do better on those tests. So obviously, if you don't have four or so AP practice tests, ask your teacher. If you lost any of them, ask your teacher. We all give out the same tests. There are about 400 questions circulating, so it's very important. So, Dylan, we're going to get off the air now. I'm going to have this up on demand. So we thank you all
it.
For listening for Marco, Andrew, Eddie, and Sarah, and Dylan. We are going to sign off now.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
See you later,
bye.
Everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Last word in.
Dude, you didn't turn on my mic. I just turned off. I really did.
Okay.
I just turned off.
Can you pick some music? That's
fine. Yeah.
What? Can you pick some music?
You pick some music. And everybody having a ball. I tell the fellas start the name calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor one shout out. Who let the dogs out? 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 I see the dance people had a focus. Billy Founders get out. Get back, Gruffy. Get back, you play infest in mongrel.